From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Here we are for The Media Project, an opportunity for a half hour of commentary and analysis, and perhaps we'll even get into some insight into the news media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, the editor of the Times Union. Down at the other end of the table here is Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. Thank you very much, Alan. Next we go to Ira Fussfeld, longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman and Associated Publications in Kingston, New York.
Good day. Nice to see you all.
Wonderful to see you. And here's Kaylin Brown, professor at the College of St. Rose.
Hello, all.
Hi. Great to see you. What's new in the academic world of journalism?
Well, the student newspaper came out for the first time this week for the semester, and they're working on more stories for next week because it's a constant wheel of fortune.
And how much of a role do you have and do faculty have in your particular campus paper?
So I am the advisor to the campus paper, and when they need advice, they come to me.
Well, now I have to say that in some universities and schools, long ago, part of the revolution, part of the resistance was to throw out the faculty advisor and say, we don't need you. You know, we can do this on our own without you. And why hasn't that happened at your school?
I don't know why it hasn't happened, but I can say that last night I had a 30-minute conversation with one of my editors who needed advice. So they are formulating journalists. They are not quite yet full-grown journalists, so they need guidance, just like I had a mentor, many mentors along the way.
Well, you know, back in the day, there was a guy who was running a hospital in the Bronx, and he was a follower, I believe, of Frantz Fanon. You may not know him. He was a guy who caused trouble as a philosopher. Well, in any case, what happened was he said, I'll know I've succeeded on the day they throw me out. And when they had him on their shoulders and they were throwing him out, he was yelling, not ready yet. You're not ready yet.
Well, we hastened the demise of the advisor at our newspaper when I was editor of the Oracle at SUNY New Paltz.
New Paltz.
And we all thought we were smarter than everybody. And that, you know, just talking about 1968. But in retrospect, we should have had an advisor.
A lot of colleges simply don't want the liability. You know, they want to have the newspapers be independent so that the colleges don't shoulder financial responsibility should something inappropriate or perhaps libelous be published.
Well, we do shoulder the responsibility in terms of the financial component because since we're a private college, student fees pay for this newspaper, which is a club, as opposed to another school. I believe UAlbany, for instance, has the Albany Student Press, and I'm fairly certain that that is an independent organization.
Yes, it is, absolutely. And though they have been coached by people on our staff. So when they did a redesign, it was in fact under the parameters of our design director, Tom Palmer, who then became a faculty member at UAlbany.
And St. Rose still has a print product.
We do indeed, and it's delivered not only on campus, but at more than a dozen locations in the city of Albany.
Very cool. Anyway, well, thank you. That was a little uncharted departure into the realm of academic journalism.
As usual, as usual, Rex, you went somewhere.
Well, here's
somewhere.
And
I had to take the other side.
Greetings, says Dave from Pittsfield, who has written in at media@wamc.org. So Alan, he says, this is about you, Alan. So Alan, he says, was touting the value of community access TV, and a writer suggested the live streaming of various meetings, and everyone equates this with journalism. Isn't journalism really supplying context to a story, Dave says? Is the weather cam on top of the Crown Plaza in Pittsfield a journalistic endeavor, or is it simply a broadcast? He says, I love PCTV, I guess that's public access probably, TV in Pittsfield, and watch a ton of the local meetings. While they are informative, they are simply the coverage of the city's business, no context, no explanation, and no outside explanations of the discussion being broadcast. Very interesting.
Would you like me to give an answer, or do you want me to
Sure. Go right ahead and just wait until I can jump on. That's fine. You go first.
Okay. I was hoping the letter would say, I agree with Alan, and then you would take the other side.
Well, in some ways, we do agree. But I do believe that everything in the journalistic parameter that raises our consciousness or our ability to understand is so if there wasn't a community television station, I watched the Board of Education. My friend Bonnie Silvers is the chair from down at in Egremont.
And I'm just fascinated. You lead an exciting life.
Right. I'm just fascinated by watching the moth approaching the flame, you know, and seeing what differences there are. So I become informed in a way that I would not if it didn't exist. Therefore, I do believe it's journalism. I believe there are many different types of journalism. I used to be regularly criticized by a guy from, let's just say, one of the right-wing newspapers to say, he's a professor, he's not a journalist, even though I had a column, I was a publisher of a newspaper, albeit a small one, a student newspaper, and running one of the largest public radio stations in the country, he'd say, he's not a journalist, only I am because I write articles. Well, I don't agree with that.
So what about Dave's context? His question, is the weather cam on top of the hotel a journalistic endeavor?
Yes, it is, and I'm going to tell you why. Because first of all, I see them all shaking their
heads. Caitlin is shaking her head.
That means I'm winning.
You know, but, no, you're not.
Yes, but here's what.
There's more?
It's on top of the building. Where do we see it? Well, we see it on the early morning newscast, a journalistic enterprise, if there ever was one. Somebody decides to put their boots on or not put their boots on, or their toe warmers, which I'm experiencing right now, in their shoes as a result of having seen that on the television. It's journalism, I tell you.
Well, they also could look out the front window, and therefore you'd say that God is practicing journalism because he sent the rain, right? I mean, I'm just making this up, but your context is missing here.
Our listener is about context, and that is, I think our listener is accurate. I think Dave is accurate in saying that we provide context in journalism. I think that when citizens across the country have helped to chronicle the Black Lives Matter situation, for instance, thankfully we have had people out there armed with their smartphones who have recorded instances of police brutality.
Is it journalism? Is that journalism?
And then that gets formulated into a piece of journalism when it gets shared. On its own, without context, I do not believe it is journalism.
The two of you are so arrogant.
Accurate.
That it is. No, you're
yes, that's what you meant.
You are arrogant. You say, we do this, and so therefore we're good, and everybody else is bad. Let me tell you.
Didn't say it was bad. It's just people, not journalism.
Yeah,
we're just defining our terms. You used to say that Johnny Carson was journalism as well.
I did.
And by the way,
a lot more people than you'll ever influence.
On the I'm winning comment, so that takes me back to a few summers ago, just very briefly, when our family was vacationing, a very huge amount of us, and one of the cousins saw me get off the phone from a work call and said, "Did you win?" And it was a male. And I said, "What do you mean, did I win?" And his automatic observation was, I was involved in a conversation concerning work, and it had to be some sort of tension where there was a win-lose. And I said, "I'm not playing to win. It's about that."
Well, I know I want to hear from
like
Ira.
Our president.
I want to hear from Ira about this, but I'm telling you now, winning or losing does occur within journalism. You're on the phone with somebody, your cousin may have been observing it, and you've been saying, "It stays in." And the editor or somebody else, the male chauvinist pig editor, says, "Take it out. I tell you, take it out. It goes out." Now that's winning or losing.
Well, listen, if you have a camera trained on a meeting, whether it's on public access TV or whether it's C-SPAN, where they just turn on the camera and watch the Congress in action, and often it's not in action, you just see them milling around. I don't describe that as journalism. I think it provides a service for the community or for the nation that's interested in watching this kind of stuff. But by the definition of journalism, as I know it, context, editing, what's important and what's not, that's what journalists do because people typically don't have the time to sit and just watch school board. I thought you were going to let me talk.
Well, you
go
did.
Ahead.
That's enough.
Yeah.
Oh, really, Ira?
Really?
Oh, really?
O'Reilly.
So that's very good. So the New York POST is providing context, and that's good because that's journalism. And wait, And you, sir, are telling me that the closer we come to the model, what's better about the New York Times and the New York POST? It's much more accurate. It describes what actually happened in many cases, but not always. And you, sir, you know who you remind me of?
Who's that?
You remind me, you and the other two, Galen and Rex, remind me of the three tenors. Except that you
ice
guys,
cream.
Yeah,
oh,
except
I can't
that
do that.
Guys,
cut it out.
The three tenors in this case is the three chauvinists.
Well, all right. So which one of the three of us wants to once again instruct the professor on what the difference is between the New York Post and the New York Times, and the New York Post being an outlier in journalism, but nevertheless it does practice journalism. I happen to think it practices a less informed and less respected form of journalism, but nonetheless it is journalism. And the comparison that you're making does not hold water, and I win.
I see. This is a stupid conversation.
Ira.
And I want to say something. I don't think I said it on this program last week, but I do think it's worth noting, because you often bring up the New York Post and the Daily News, and not only are they outliers from the rest of the mostly respected journalism community, but they are a very small footprint in journalism in this country. They're both New York City newspapers. They are not widely distributed around the rest of the country. And the guy in Sheboygan does not know what's on the front page or on the editorial page in the New York Post. We see it every day, so it disproportionately influences us and perhaps our view of journalism. But most of the rest of the country doesn't know what the heck we're talking
about.
Okay,
so the Berkshire Eagle in Great Barrington or in Pittsfield,
even smaller than the POST, of course.
Yeah. No, the Berkshire Eagle determines a great deal about people's perception and the lives that they lead in that community.
Absolutely.
So your sense, Ira, which is entirely pompous and misplaced and condescending, which is that, as the president might say, size matters.
No, I think he was just saying that when you use outliers to make a point,
what do you mean outliers?
Your point is limited.
First of all, the New York Post and the Daily News are now on the web, and people read it all the time. Read them all the time. I read the Los Angeles newspaper virtually every day. I read the Washington Post virtually every day. So the one thing we do know now is that the franchise of many of these major newspapers is expanding. So you know what? It's a great thing I'm on this program, because the rest of you are so predictable and chauvinistic and condescending.
You can share your thoughts on this, media@wamc.org, and we're happy to hear from our listeners. Alan Shartok, Ira Fussfeld, Kaelin Brown, and Rex Smith are here for the Media Project this week. You know, you were making reference to the Berkshire Eagle, which has a lawsuit pending against it. They're trying to get a judge to dismiss a lawsuit that was filed. So here's something. This guy comes to a town meeting and makes all kinds of claims and so on, and the newspaper actually reports what he said, but reports also at the bottom of the story that, quote, somebody is saying, you shouldn't drive home because your breath smells of alcohol. Now, the guy who's filing a lawsuit acknowledges that the incident in the parking lot happened, but he's filed a $50 million lawsuit against this newspaper in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, because he says he was defamed by the accurate quotation of what happened in the parking lot.
I love this story, and I sent it to you, because obviously the newspaper put it in because they feel it's part of their journalistic standard to make sure that if they're accused of something, like anybody else is accused of something, it shows up in the newspaper, right? I mean, I think that you got to give them credit for that. But we all know what the outcome of this is going to be. The Supreme Court of the United States has said this guy injected himself into the public discourse, and therefore New York Times versus Sullivan, it's not going to be. But I thought there was a nuance here which was pretty interesting, because it's before the judge, the local judge. Let's say the judge had a bad time with the Berkshire Eagle at some time, or one of its columnists. Does the judge take it out in a law case, or does he follow the law? In this case, I have no doubt he's going to follow the law.
Well, his job is to follow the law, and this individual was in the public eye. He was a city council candidate, and he says that this reportage cost him his election. So he did put himself in the public eye.
And he may be right. It may have cost him this election, and that may have been appropriate.
Well, you know, for all of Trump's bluster about changing the libel laws, which he cannot do and can't be done on a federal level, the one thing that needs to be changed, in my opinion, about the libel laws is making sure that when a suit like this, which I believe holds no water, is either thrown out of court or settled in favor of the newspaper, that the other side should be paying the court fees, because this is just a waste of everybody's time and of
Absolutely.
The newspaper's money.
Absolutely. Under New York state law now, that would be the case. The newspaper would go to the judge. No, I'm sorry, that's not right. Well, if it's a frivolous lawsuit, it is right. You would have the capacity to go and say, this is a frivolous suit. Let me try to get the lawyer's fees.
You might be right. I know on FOI cases, the judge can order it.
Freedom of Information, FOI.
Yes.
Shall order it, in fact, in New York. But, you know, if it's a frivolous lawsuit, you always have the opportunity, whether a judge would conclude that this is frivolous or simply, I mean, legally, by that standard, frivolous. Anyway, you made reference to Donald Trump, which always happens on this show, and he who has often spoken of fake news. Now, listen, if you're Italian, here's this new thing. The Italian government has created an online portal where people can report hoaxes, internet hoaxes. The goal is to address fake news ahead of this year's Italian elections, and then the cops will check it out. So what could possibly go wrong? Yeah.
Are they defining fake news in the manner in which it was originally intended to be used, or are they defining it in the Trumpian manner?
They're not defining it at all. That's number one problem, right?
They're suggesting that the police force would monitor and choose which is fake and which is not, which is problematic, of course, because that involves the government and the press.
It shouldn't be problematic because the line of demarcation between fake news as it was originally described and how it is used now is quite clear. Fake news is news that is made up out of whole cloth, and the way it's being expanded is fake news is being used to describe stories with which people disagree or when there are errors that are purely the result of incomplete or careless journalism, but correctable. But the original fake news, I can live with that title if it's just made up. And that's not what I hear is happening here.
Not what's happening
elsewhere in the world.
In Italy. But in the UK now, the prime minister has set up a special task force in the security apparatus, a dedicated national security communication unit to try to go after stuff that actually is disinformation by state actors and others.
In other words, known as the Russians.
Russia, exactly
yeah.
right.
Yeah,
exactly right.
Yes. Because, of course, Russia affected the Brexit vote in 2016. And so now they have a special parliamentary inquiry, and Theresa May, whom the president does not like, obviously.
Although, as we speak, they're in Davos and they're making up.
Well, isn't that nice?
It does seem that it's valuable for these various actors to be proactive in identifying if there are state actors, i.e. Russia, going in and manipulating elections. I think there's value in that. It seems like, how can we go wrong in having governments that are paying attention to possible manipulation of elections? However, I think there should be due care exercised concerning content that is shared as news and who gets to do that. Not the government, the press.
And meanwhile, I don't know if you were going to bring this up, Rex, but this concept of fake news as it's being widely and incorrectly used is becoming pretty dangerous stuff. Witness what happened last week when someone was arrested in Michigan for threatening to come down to Atlanta and shoot up the CNN building, which this person claimed is providing fake news. And this is pretty scary stuff.
Yes, well, so I think your point well taken for a change, Ira, is that it's extraordinarily subjective, this concept of fake news. Because let's just say that Donald Trump, in his own mind, believes that CNN is out to get him, or MSNBC, even worse, is out to get him, or the New York Times is out to get him, and is convinced in his own mind that that's the case and that they are shaping their stories, they're assigning their reporters, and so things are out of kilter because basically it's all fake news, which is designed to have one purpose, get him. Now, of course, I don't agree with that, but it just shows you what the subjectivity is of all of this.
That goes back to that point that the original concept of what the term meant was actual hoaxes, you know, this stuff developed in Russian internet parlors.
Yeah, I mean, if somebody writes a story that says Donald Trump had an affair with a barnyard animal, that is fake news. If somebody writes a story that says Donald Trump had an affair with a porn star, that is not fake news. Now, if it's inaccurate, prove it, or not prove it's the wrong way. Yes, go ahead.
No, I think you're on a dangerous ledge here. In other words, if in fact it's inaccurate, then it's fake news.
No.
So I reject the term, term we're using, the FN term, which is the F word. That's the four-letter word for me, because we are conflating news with something other than news. And I think that the terminology of news on its own
is
exactly right.
The actuality of news is that it is produced by journalists who do do research and vetting and reporting and more research. And what is used other than that, hoaxes and made up fiction, is fiction. So, but it is not news. So and it shouldn't be characterized as news, because if you characterize it as news, you confuse readers, listeners, viewers who barely understand how the work gets done in many instances.
So is Breitbart news?
Yeah, Breitbart is practicing a form of journalism that I think we in this room would deplore, but it's journalism.
What if they tell lies?
Lies are lies.
To me, Rex, I'm sorry, I know that the three of you are all lined up against me here.
I don't think that's the point.
But no, that is the point. It's not the point about being against me. But the point is, if a story is inaccurate, if it isn't real, if it's wrong, it is fake.
There's a difference between an actual news story that has an inaccuracy in it because it is developed by human beings who are imperfect and make mistakes than someone who intentionally sets out to deceive the public and pretends to produce something that masquerades as news.
And that was the original definition of fake news. The president has taken over that term. I think Kaylin is probably right. We really ought to just steer away from that.
I'm so surprised you guys agree with each
other. I want to reclaim it. News is news. We need to talk about what news is so the public understands the difference.
And I'm simply saying, whatever the motivation for the lie, if it's a lie, or, okay, lie's a bad word, I'll take it back.
No, a lie's a good word. Go ahead and use it.
Because we deal with the same thing with a lie. In the very beginning, newspapers didn't want to say Trump was lying. The Washington Post just said 2,000 lies in 1 year by Trump, right? But I don't get it. I mean, I don't really understand how it could be not fake if it is a lie. If somebody got it wrong, then is it a lie? Is it just, as Kaylin just says, a mistake? I think these are very dubious things.
I think it's a difference.
An arrogant one.
Here's what's going on in France, for example. Emmanuel Macron, the French president, says he wants to give the country's media regulator the power to block or even remove fake news content from the internet during the upcoming French national elections. He's not talking about, I hope, about stories that his party doesn't like. He's talking about actual fabricated content that isn't even real. It is a slippery slope, indeed. It definitely
indeed,
is.
Right.
In Germany, for example, there's a new hate speech law that requires social networks like Facebook and Twitter to remove hateful commentary. That's a dangerous thing, too, when the law says you have to take that out because that's...
Okay, so if a journalist who's writing from the far right and a Nazi writes a column and says Jews belong in the gas chambers, we just saw some of that, by the way, that has been reported, maybe not from a newspaper, but around, and it is, we heard about it because it was journalism. You mean to say that that shouldn't be excluded?
I think that is hate speech, and I do think a society can judge that to be worthy of punishment. I do. Hate speech in this country that motivates actions, even under New York state law, there are elements that you can pursue.
Isn't that a slippery slope, too?
It is.
One's definition of hate speech is different than someone else.
My greatest triumph with Mario Cuomo, which really ticked him off, was we were on the show one day, and he was talking about how he was opposed to the death penalty. Death penalty, death penalty, death penalty. I'm opposed to it. I'm opposed to it under any circumstance. Mm-hmm. I said, Adolf Eichmann. Now, here's a politician who was not about to say Adolf Eichmann should not have been executed during that time. There are always these exceptions to these rules.
What did he say?
I don't remember what he said. I know he called me up that night and yelled at me.
Well, it was a great triumph one way or another. All right. We're actually out of time. Fascinating conversation here. We're not going to use that F word anymore, okay?
Let's not use the F word.
Well, let's hope that the listeners are very discerning about its use when they hear it used.
Yes.
Because there is a distinction between fake news and news that may not be as accurate or more likely will not meet the definition of real news to the person who's in the barrel.
Ira, I'm about to tell you about a third of this country. We know them because they record themselves in favor of Donald Trump or more. 40% will say, we understand what fake news is, and you're all a bunch of fakers.
Yeah, well, the damage is done.
So that's The Media Project. Ira Fussfeld and Kaylin Brown and Alan Chartok, and I'm Rex Smith. We thank you for joining us.
Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.